Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Governor Mike Dunleavy is once again threatening to veto a compromise bill legislators hammered out to boost funding for the state's public schools and make a variety of policy changes. That is, unless they pass additional policy changes he's pushed for. Dunleavy has yet to make the threat publicly. But Clayton Holland, the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, said Dunleavy was clear during a teleconference this morning with school district leaders across the state.
Really what it ended up boiling down to is that, you know, he does plan to veto not only the bill, but the appropriation amount for the BSA increase.
It's the first time the governor has indicated whether he'll sign or veto the high-profile bill that passed the legislature by a combined vote of 48 to 11. Boosting education funding is the top priority for the Democrat-heavy bipartisan caucuses that control the House and Senate. Asked about the meeting, the governor's press office pointed to a midday statement on the governor's social media accounts. The statement acknowledged the meeting, but did not explicitly say Dunleavy planned to veto the bill. House Bill 57 would boost long-term funding for public schools by increasing the base per student funding by $700. In an effort to compromise, lawmakers added a variety of education policy changes to the bill. Those range from a ban on student cell phone use to incentive grants aimed at boosting reading performance. But Dunleavy wants more, according to superintendents who attended the meeting. Dunleavy told superintendents to call their legislators and advocate for a statewide open enrollment system and additional changes to laws around charter schools. Cuspuck School District Superintendent Madeline Aguillard attended the meeting and confirmed the veto threat. She says her district is already operating with bare minimum staff and will face a 10% budget shortfall without additional funding.
I mean, it feels like all of the students, even the students that are, you know, most in need, are being held, you know, as bargaining chips.
Lawmakers have said they're confident that they have the requisite 40 votes to override a veto of House Bill 57. At least six minority Republicans, one more than would be necessary, have said publicly that they'll vote to override the governor. But that may not be enough to actually boost education funding next year. The Alaska Constitution allows Dunleavy to issue line item vetoes that reduce or eliminate spending, even if it's required by state law. Holland, the Kenai superintendent, said Dunleavy had threatened to issue a line item veto reducing school funding if lawmakers don't pass the additional policy items he demands. Representative Louis Stutz, a Kodiak Republican who caucuses with the Democratic-heavy bipartisan majority, says Dunleavy should accept the concessions lawmakers have already added to the bill.
This business is all about compromise. And when you say, I want it my way or it's history, that doesn't scream compromise to me.
Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer says he doesn't see much daylight between what lawmakers pass and what the governor is pushing for.
So we're very hopeful, but as you know as well as I do, that often the simplest things can get stuck on a whole lot of different obstacles. So we'll see if we make it through.
But key lawmakers have said they're concerned that the policies could have unintended consequences and erode local control of school districts. Dunleavy has until May 19th to sign or veto the bill. And reporters on the Alaska desk recently asked people all over the state some open-ended questions about how they're feeling after President Donald Trump's first 100 days. From the Aleutians to Southeast and the Interior, there are Never Trumpers and MAGA diehards, and some Alaskans having changes of heart. Here's what some of them have to say.
It's Vicky McDonald's, spelled just like the restaurant.
Has your life changed at all in the last 100 days?
For me personally, no, I haven't really experienced a lot of changes for myself. Work standpoint, with tariffs coming into effect soon, we have seen where our warehouse is trying to purchase up things, things like the bicycles, for example, that we know are going to get hit hard with tariffs. We're buying as many as we can now and warehousing them, so we won't have to impact the customers by raising the prices right away for the things they're going to want here really soon with summer coming up. But personally, I haven't experienced any changes.
Walter Lord, I don't believe a word Trump says. The only promise he kept in his last was that he lowered taxes for billionaires and big corporations. They don't need help. And then they cut all the things that help poor and middle class. If you take away things that benefit poor and middle class, you're taking away food. I mean, not allowing teachers to write off $250 for school supplies and you know, put meals on the weave. I mean, you name it, anything that helps the poor and middle class.
Well, I voted for Donald Trump, and I'd do it every day if I could. My name's Terrence Pardee. I've lived in Haines for almost 55 years. I've got much more hope for my country now.
Sure.
We were losing it. Okay. Anybody that doesn't realize that just has no idea, apparently. We're headed in the right direction. Leave the guy alone, let him do his job. And anybody else that shoots their mouths off about things being better without him is absolutely crazy.
He shouldn't be president.
So what is your name?
Melanie Conroe. So I live in Anchorage. I've been here 30-something years. I voted for Trump the first time because I was trying to do something good for the world. And now I feel that he isn't, and what he's doing is wrong. Completely wrong. He shouldn't be taking away anything. He should be giving us, you know, especially us lower income that are on poverty that actually have to use food stamps and Medicaid and stuff. I can't afford my rent half the time now. By the first of the month, I pay most of my paycheck out to rent and bills, and then I have nothing left to do anything else with. And it's just gotten so expensive, we can't do it anymore. I mean, we're scrounging from week to week to payday to payday. It's just unfair that we have to suffer, yet the rich get richer. So he sucks.
Hector Gomez. I vote for him. I think he do good, but I think he's not right now. He do bad stuff, you know. I don't think he do right. Too many things. Economics so bad right now. Everything is very bad right now. I trust to him, but, you know, I don't know. We got to give it a couple more days. Let me see what happens.
And Anchorage officials are preparing to roll out funding dedicated to improving the child care sector. The move comes 2 years after Anchorage residents voted to dedicate the roughly $5 to $6 million the city receives annually in marijuana taxes to fund child care incentives. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
Former acting mayor and Assemblymember Austin Quinn Davidson has been working as a contractor with the city to help determine how to allocate the marijuana tax funding. She's also currently the interim executive director for the Anchorage Child Care and Early Education Fund Board. She says the city has seen a dwindling supply of child care providers in recent years.
There's many pieces of the puzzle to solve. Ensuring that there's sufficient spots for people who need them is important. And then it's also important to look at costs. So the 2025 budget looks at both and addresses both.
The funding will be divided into three different avenues. The first is over $1 million to specifically cover child care costs for people working in the sector. Desiree Shepler is president and CEO of Alaska Family Services, which will be in charge of distributing the funds. Shepler says many workers in the child care sector are also parents, and supporting their child care costs will help keep the workforce stable for all parents.
A part of keeping the sector alive is having folks who can afford to work there, and being able to afford their child care is a big piece of that for many parents.
Quinn Davidson says the approach is modeled after a state of Kentucky program that provided free child care to child care sector employees. The result was a more than 100% increase in the number of families receiving child care assistance in just 1 year. While Quinn Davidson understands concerns that the subsidies only target a specific part of the city's population, she thinks supporting the childcare industry will pay wider dividends.
It benefits the broader community because more families can access childcare, and it benefits the economy because you have more families working because they have care available.
The state of Alaska has a broader existing childcare subsidy program that is based on income. Shepler says the funding for childcare workers to cover their own care needs will not be income dependent, and she hopes to start rolling out that funding by the end of summer. A second chunk of the marijuana taxes, about $2 million, will go to childcare providers, both in-home and centers, to fund larger projects. Quinn Davidson says ideally, some of those projects would be upgrades to existing programs.
We know that because entities are struggling to pay their workers and they don't want to raise rates on families, that things like playground equipment, you know, any sort of expansion, those are the first things to go because people don't have the funds to do that. And so we wanted to provide a space for folks to do small to large capital upgrades.
Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And I'm Clarice Larson with KTOO here in Juneau. Thank you for tuning in.